Before dinner, he and Alma went out for a walk. Again, Alma recalled, and I quote, "Suddenly he burst out. It's not so simple to marry a person like me. I am free and must be free. I cannot be bound or tied to one spot. My job at the opera is simply one day to the next." A feeling of suffocation came over me. He laid down the law without thinking of consulting my feelings. After a moment's silence, I said, "Well, of course. Don't forget that I am the child of artists and have always lived among artists, and also I'm one myself. What you say seems to me obvious." We did not speak another word all the way home. He seemed cheerful and reassured. We went, by tacit agreement, straight up to my room. There he kissed me and went on to talk of a speedy marriage, as though it all went without saying, unquote. Well, soon enough, within another 5 weeks, give or take, Alma and Gustav were doing more than just kissing. And it was a speedy marriage, speedy enough that Alma, about 4 weeks pregnant, wasn't yet showing. This is not to say there weren't misgivings. My goodness, there were enough misgivings to fill a couple of lectures. Gustav was worried, terrified, wouldn't be too strong a word, about their age difference and his ability to, well, keep Alma happy, okay? Alma was filled with fear that she was being a silly, if not downright irresponsible little girl, not in love, but in search of a famous father figure. Mahler's sister, Justine, was deeply concerned about Alma's reputation as a frivolous and capricious flirt who used famous men in order to elevate her own flawed self-esteem. And Alma's stepfather, the artist Kurt Mahl, was downright offensive, reminding Alma constantly about Mahler's age, his debts, his shaky position at the opera, going so far as to tell her that, to quote Mahl, "To marry such a man would be a sin for such a lovely creature from such a good family as you. Think of your children. He'll trample you underfoot, and you'll end up by being miserable. Don't go and throw yourself away on the sickly and degenerate Jew," unquote. For our information, Mahl became a rabid Nazi and committed suicide in 1945 at the age of 85 as the Russian army was entering Vienna. Now, look, we must move on, but I do want to make sure I haven't given you the wrong impression. While Alma might have been ambivalent about her own motivations for falling in love with Mahler, she wasn't ambivalent about her love for Mahler. And Gustav, for his part, was absolutely addled by Alma. During their brief courtship, he wrote her every day, whether he was in Vienna or away. His letters are genuine love letters, filled with extraordinary passion and candor. For example, I quote one of Mahler's letters. "I no longer imagined it possible that I could meet with such happiness, to be loved as I love. Every single time a female has crossed my path, I've had to recognize in agony that dreams of happiness are shattered by reality. Young as you are, Alma, you well know what has happened to you and will be able to understand my feelings when, with all the emotions of my heart and being, I now not only feel but may also say with supreme tenderness and bliss that I'm truly in love for the first time. Just as everything that I am is henceforth yours, so I encompass all that is you with my entire soul," unquote. Our heading for the next material is Alma's music and Mahler's music, or who's going to be the composer in this house. At first glance, Alma didn't think much of Mahler's music. No, not at all. And Mahler, for his part, was terrified that his bride-to-be wouldn't like or understand his music. But the big bone of contention between the lovebirds was not to be Mahler's music, but Alma's. It was in mid-December, some 6 weeks into their relationship, and about 3 weeks into their engagement, if we can call it such, that Alma, writing to Gustav while he was in Dresden, excused her letter's brevity due to the fact that she had a composition lesson coming up, and she had work to do. We can safely assume, as did Mahler, that by work, Alma meant composing.